I'm here with Eric. This is Life, Death, Sci-Fi. We read Calico by Lee Goldberg. Maybe our last in this time travel series. I think we'd said that. I'm not saying maybe because I have any suggestions or arguments to extend it. Although honestly, I keep coming across other time travel things here or there. I want to read that. And I think with all these series, you could just go on forever.
Chris, it's nice to be here with you today talking about this book. Mystery, a little sci-fi, history, Western, all mixed together.
Well, we should say there will be spoilers on Life, Death, Sci-Fi. We're assuming you don't care or that you've already read the book. There's some sci-fi involved, and they know it's time travel involved. But I have to say, if somebody had just handed me this and said, hey, read this, it's a lot of fun, and I had no idea it was about sci-fi, I would have loved the twist kind of early on where we find out what happens with Owen Slater's body.
All the little delicious clues.
It begins with Beth McDade, who's a police officer, a detective, who has a bit of a troubled past, right?
Don't they all? About it?
Yeah, a bit of a trope there, right? It's troubled past she's trying to deal with. She's left where she was in L.A. or Hollywood. She's off in a small town, eastern kind of California. One night, she's called out to the scene of this accident where this elderly couple in a motorhome has struck someone and killed them. And they describe how this man ran out screaming, terrified, and they ran out in the middle of the road and they couldn't stop and hit him. And she comes out to that scene, takes this down, the body goes off. Anyway, the body's sent off and examined. In the meantime, this other detective comes looking for this man that's gone missing, who was traveling from Vegas back to see his family. And it turns out, he went missing around the same time as this accident. And during the accident, I should have mentioned, there was this sort of, like people describe there being like a lightning storm in the sky, and this military base nearby was saying,
okay,
well,
nice job.
We had some dumpster fires and stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's this guy, it's strange, right? This thing's happened. And anyway, so when she gets to the morgue and they're looking at this body, the coroner describes everything about this man. He's got the clap. He's totally infested with all kinds of metal poisonings they used to mine in that area. All his clothing looks like
dental work
200 years ago. What's that?
Dental work with the fillings that we haven't used in 100 years.
Yeah, terribly toxic kind of fillings. He was going to die anyway, they said. He's just a mess. And I can't really explain it. Maybe he was just a guy who liked to live out in the middle of nowhere and replicate this lifestyle from way back when. And in the meantime, there's also this kind of construction going on that started nearby, and they unearthed this unmarked grave. And in that grave, they find this body. And the body is 100 plus years old, and yet it's wearing the clothing of somebody from today.
Crazy.
They get the identifiers back from his teeth and his fillings. They discover that he's actually this man that went missing that the detective was looking for.
Just a few days ago.
Just a couple days ago. And so what's happened here, right? And again, spoilers, but we end up with a story where we find out that this Owen Slater has gone back in time and is trying to survive in the early 19th century.
I am so delighted with how he did survive and progress in the town of Calico.
Yeah, that was cool. So he was a sort of a foodie and a vlogger. Who would do some reviews and also would cook. Like, he's a trained chef that, had his own kind of YouTube food channel. And so he goes back. Yeah, I was wondering that too. I was like, there's no way this guy can make it. I mean, this is not going to be believable. There's no way this guy is going to make it. And he's smart enough to tap into his talents. And he goes into this saloon and says that if he can cook the best meal they've ever had, would they give him let him take over running the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he goes back and is able to whip together something that they think is amazing because they're eating just terrible food. and
which is a little bit, okay, I'll give it to him. I think that part of it was, to me, that was everything terrible in the Old West? I just got the idea that, oh, it was so terrible living there. Unless you had to, who would?
Yeah, I find that. As somebody who's traveled back in time a lot and experienced the West, I know it's very believable. But I found it believable even before I read that Goldberg had read a lot of journals and all these different things from back then. I guess that was due diligence in that regard. Imagine having no sewer system. We're talking 100 years before people had any concept of bacteria.
Yeah, wash your hands before you eat or prepare food.
Yeah, not washing your hands at all and not bathing hardly at all. And it just must have been these horses are doing their thing everywhere. People are walking around in it, tracking it everywhere. It's that alone, just like the inability to deal with sewage and understanding of the need to keep things clean is enough to make it pretty terrible.
I live in a place, though. I walk down the Camino, down the horse path, and there's horse poop everywhere. It's in the streets, too. And then I walk down to the two blocks away. There's a Wednesday market. And the first thing that you see is a big table of chickens that are just laying out there in refrigeration. But up the path a little bit, you can see the fish market, and they are laid out on ice, but flies are everywhere over them and all of that. And in some ways, have we progressed that far? We still know about bacteria and stuff, and we wash our food. I could probably film a Western right here in my backyard, the same kinds of things that he was talking about in Calico.
Yeah, except that you're, when you cut the scene for a second, you're probably going to use a toilet.
Of course.
And not a ditch. What do they call that ditch in there?
Oh, man. Yeah. No, don't. Yeah, it's just, no. Okay, so he survives in this town, and he meets his wife.
Yeah, that was a cool twist. I didn't see.
I love that scene where they connected, and they thought, okay. She said, there's somebody else in her mind. I could just see, there's somebody else like me.
Yeah, even before that, you talked about all these cookie crumbs and kind of clues. And at that same night where this happens, this detective, when is it set, like 2022 or 23 or 24, like right now, basically.
Yeah, no.
She is also reading all these incident reports where someone has...
A grizzly bear.
This extinct grizzly bear shows up and starts wreaking havoc in this park. This giant boulder appears on the road.
The engine in somebody's living room. How could it get there?
This huge engine that couldn't possibly have been assembled overnight just appears in somebody's living room. And so there's all these. So it's what becomes clear is in this rip in time, number of different kind of time periods have all, I don't know, coalesced in some way, come together. And so these objects and things appear in all these different timelines. And so we find out one day when he's been working there for a little while and a few weeks, I think at this point, maybe 6 weeks, and or maybe it's longer, I can't remember, but this group of women comes in who are all working at some other sort of hospitality place down the road, and they're meant to be all wholesome and, I don't know, more pure. They haven't been tainted by a lot of the work that women are forced to do in these places. That's the idea here. He looks at one of them and he says, I know your secret. And she's like, what?
That was awesome.
And then he gets up and starts playing Gilligan's Island, which is a funny choice, right? But
very popular.
Popular enough that anybody... would somebody today know it? Would a kid today know Gilligan's Island? I don't think so. But anybody who's, what we say, 30 or 40 and above... Certainly anybody who was of her age would probably recognize it. Anyway, so he starts playing this too, and then she realizes he's like her, somebody who's lost in time. And he says he recognizes her because she's had breast implants and I can't remember some other, there was some other reason, but there was like, yeah, that's how he was able to, which is a funny choice.
Or maybe a perfect smile, something like that.
Oh, yeah, maybe that was that.
But ding, ding, this is like a time travel alert here. He wants to, Owen, the main character in the past, who's stuck in the past, doesn't want to disturb anything, the butterfly effect from two or three novels ago. Doesn't want to disturb anything for his daughter, so he just wants to play it really cool and safe. But now he's going to marry this woman he found in the past from the future, and how does that line up with his own future with his daughter? I think he's putting her in danger.
Yeah, that was a cool, I guess, is that a plot device or a way of dealing with the time travel? There's a mention there of how he's aware of some story where somebody goes back to the dinosaurs and changes time. And so it's a clear reference to Bradbury's The Sound of Thunder. And so he keeps his name Ben Cartwright, and he commits to staying in Calico, right? He's going to stay in this town, even though he knows it eventually becomes this kind of tourist trap, ghost town, years in the future. But he commits to staying there and not to change anything that would prevent his future life and the life of his daughter, which is really sweet. He's able to do it, spoiler, but yeah, would that even be possible? Because this is where you get into this loop where it's like, once you're in that loop, did it all work out because of him going back in time?
So it was destiny?
Fate? Yeah, is it?
Fate?
Yeah, is it with these stories, there's always this question.
Always.
But which trip are we in, or which
timeline?
Which time around the circle are we in? Is this the? My assumption is always the first time this is happening, but who knows? This is just once there's a cycle that's created, right? You would assume he's traveling back over and over again.
So does he get a chance to make some changes the second time he goes back? Does it always have to be the same way?
No, because there's only one version of him at a time experiencing it. You know what I mean? Like he goes through.
But, yeah, I was going for the Groundhog's Day.
Oh, yeah.
He would go back and say, okay, now can I fix this? Which is another kind of cycle, which is time travel.
Well, that's different than, say, Wendy. I didn't really think about this until this morning, and so I didn't get a chance to really go back and try to double check, but she keeps her name, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is her name. So her family could find somebody with the exact same... Oh, we should say, like, they end up... Of course, they know Ben and Wendy. They know... That was her original name, wasn't it? Yeah.
Gwendolyn, they know the Wendy, yeah.
Yeah, they know the future. And so he doesn't want to disrupt anything. But at the same time... He ends, you know, has enough know-how and foresight, and she has this sort of. She did a book report or something about the town of Calico and all this, or the mining around there. And she knows that a lot of the it's gold, right?
Okay, see right there, that changes the timeline.
Yeah,
they have kids. That changes the timeline forward, and it's so. Spoiler alert, it's so cool when his great-grandkids meet his present-day daughter. It's like mind-blowing.
Yeah, good. Well, they create this thing. Family and their knowledge about like, the mining at first and how it's done on the surface. They're able to find, stake some stuff and then sell it off. And they just have like ways of subtly... knowing about certain things or when to pull out of the market or the fact that the town burns down twice, and they create this thing called, we find out later, called the List, and it has all these things to watch out for or remember, when to pull out of the stock market, like it's not so
when to avoid earthquakes,
specific enough, that they're able to build generations of wealth, and then their future family in present day is
I have to say, I would like a list.
Yeah, that's like the ethics of that, right? How would you... I don't know how anybody could resist. But for somebody who wants to make sure everything happens in a way that he has his daughter...
Right, but he still made the list.
pretty risky. Yeah. And how would you not, I guess it gets to a certain day or a certain point, I would certainly make sure that my future family donated anonymously to my future daughter, maybe even the ex-wife here, they seem to get along well enough, and they certainly have enough money to give them something.
I think it happened with Wendy's parents, Ed and Myra.
We're building up toward this twist right at the end. I just didn't see that coming at all, and I love that. There's nothing that makes me happier than a twist at the end of something that makes sense, right? It doesn't seem crazy forced, and it surprises you, because I thought...
It brings it all together. It's the framework. It pulls it tighter.
I meant to ask after our sort of intro there was, you refer to this as a mystery, and I guess my question is it, right? Is it? Because I wonder, hang on one second. It's my espresso machine going there on the side. Yeah, pretend like it. We can pretend like we're at a Denny's. Yeah. Which is what he names his restaurant. Another one of those fun points. Yeah,
perfect.
Love that. Yeah, of course he names it Denny's. That was such a kick. He must have, I think Goldberg must have had a lot of fun writing that.
Yes, I agree. I didn't catch that until five or six sentences. And then I thought, as a reader, I thought, wait a minute. Denny's?
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought, oh, that's so good.
Then they name all their kids after the Cartwright family. Pretty funny. To be honest, like I've read a lot. We're both readers. We've read a lot, right? But I really haven't read that many mysteries. I always enjoy them. I'm trying to think if I've read something like maybe 10 mysteries in my life.
Folks, you've heard it here first. This might be the birth of our first spinoff of Life, Death, Mysteries. Life, Death, and Mysteries.
Sci-fi mysteries. Sci-fi mystery subgenre?
Yeah, okay. I totally love that. So here we have a story. I think a mystery story where this detective is trying to solve the mystery that leads her to time travel. We've read time travel stories up till now where the time travel is figured out and then it's exploration after that. So it seems a little bit in reverse.
My question is the time travel... You're saying the mystery is she's trying to come to grips with and realize
figure out what happened.
That this time travel has actually happened. So there's these intertwining stories. We go back to this sort of Western, and then we come move back ahead to McDade and her pursuit of understanding what's happened. It'd be fun to go back and look at those transitions because I do think they're really wonderfully done.
But I had that in my notes too, the transitions between the present and the past, back and to the past into the present. Really,
could only
really
be
nice.
Ruined by some commercial breaks, really. Yeah. This has got to be made into either a TV series or a movie, please. Yeah, they will. They've got to do that.
He is in the industry anyway, so I think that would
for sure,
be
right?
Something.
What are we looking at? Maybe 2 or 3 years from now? It's got to happen.
Yeah.
So if that's the mystery, it seems like she begins to suspect it right away. And she looks to confirm it. I feel like that happens before the climax of this. Or I guess the question is, what would be the climax of the story? I love watching those TV shows. So I guess I expect there to be some mystery reveal at the end. And this is something where, as readers, we know right away it's time travel. Like, we're there. There's no other explanation. But I guess we're already believers as lovers.
Okay, so I'm with you on this. And here's how I see it. The climax was where she actually had the proof in her hands. She's thought it was time travel all this time. She didn't have enough evidence to prove it. And once she could prove it, all hell broke loose. The government wants to shut everything down and... maybe even hurt people. But she...
Okay, yeah, you know, I see that. That makes sense. Yeah.
She being a hard-ass woman took care of it and became the person in charge.
Okay. Yeah, I like what you're saying. All right, so that makes sense to me. It's not about us, the readers, discovering or finding out what's happened. It really is this more police procedural where she's striving after the evidence to confirm what she suspects is true, which I guess that kind of comes back to what I'm saying. It's not so much mystery to me then, but more like this police procedural type story, chasing the evidence, trying to prove something seemingly impossible to be true that only a detective has a hunch about and has a gut feeling. It's that kind of story, and not so much a whodunit or let's figure
no.
out. It's more like the evidence, now, Chris, the details, and chasing that. Yeah.
Now, Chris, there are, just like in science fiction, there are many kinds of subgenres here. Same thing with mysteries. There are lots of subgenres. This is not a whodunit, but we're cheering on the detective. Can we wrap up the novel and then get to the closing? Because I like Sitting in Poor Decisions. What a name for a bar, a dive, a water hole.
Well, you want to go straight to Poor Decisions?
No.
We're always trying to wrap up and get to poor decisions quickly so we can make some poor decisions about. That's going to be this Detective McCade and all of her.
One of my favorites. We haven't talked about one of my favorite characters, Amanda, the local coroner. I have to get you up to date on the latest mystery combo here. You can't have a good detective without a good coroner, and they make such a great team. There's so many TV shows and books about that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I saw a few of the comments on the few places I looked at. They were saying like, hey, when do we get the sequel with these characters for another mystery? We'll see. He responded to the comment.
Very strong characters.
I would definitely spend more time with McCade, and Amanda was fun, Corner. And great characters, right? A lot of fun with those. I read somewhere that he wanted to, in fact, I saved that quote here I found where he, this is from his blog. He's pretty active on social media and all that, which is interesting. He said, that's because to truly make it mine, I'd have to acknowledge the tropes of both genres. This is the mystery / police procedural and Western. I'd have to acknowledge the tropes of both genres and then ruthlessly subvert them. That's my brand, or so I am told, exemplified by my Ian Ludlow trilogy of spy novels, True Fiction, Killer Thriller, and Fake Truth. What would connect these two, the two storylines? The answer was easy. They would share the same corpse. That's a cool setup there. It had me thinking about, he's saying he subverts these tropes of both genres. I thought, what way is he subverting these? Because he's definitely playing with those. And so with the Western, it's like, he subverts it by putting a present-day person in there, and there's this meta-narrative where he's aware of all the tropes and the ideas of the past in these Westerns, and so he subverts that by making this more real. He's gunslinger, Western, blah, blah, blah. That's not what it was really like, so he subverts it by giving us the real dirt, so to speak, or literally, the pun intended, the real shit from back then. That's clear to me. How does he subvert the present day police procedural? And one of the ways that I thought maybe he does that is by giving us this female detective. And so instead of this male type who drinks too much and chases the story despite compromising their own sort of health and being and his troubled past, who's this tough guy or whatever who women find attractive despite all their troubles. It's this female protagonist who goes to this bar, Poor Decisions, seeking out of someone to satisfy her sexual needs and who drinks too much and lives in this sort of unkempt apartment. And it's instead of this male, we get this female character who's doing very masculine, right, in a cool way.
I'm not buying the whole thing because it did sound like a trope. How Goldberg twists it is he infuses the science fiction, the accidental time travel. And he gives us lots of hints of that too. Like the Philadelphia Experiment is the movie that the same kind of thing happens. So I think he subverts it with this stuff that's really not found in detective or mystery stories. Science fiction isn't usually there. I think that's how convincing.
Yeah, it's not typically sci-fi. There's a lot of supernatural in the mystery realm, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I suppose that's a subgenre. Whodunit? Yeah. We'll have to look when we design our new podcast spinoff.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to read something from this book that fits with all of the time travel stories that we have read so far in this season, and all of them seem to come to this point, or at least the reader does. So let me set this up for you a little bit. Beth and Amanda. Beth is the detective. Amanda's the coroner. They're getting together, and Beth has done some experiments on the bodies of these, the old and the new, or the present. And she says, "What I'm about to tell you is fact, not speculation, based on objective isotopic analysis. Motorhome man, who was killed on February 2nd, 2019, was born sometime in the mid-1800s. That's impossible. Owen Slater's bones were 100 years old, but belonged to a man who was born in the 1980s. That's also impossible. The only way these contradictions are possible is if both men traveled in time, one backwards, one forwards. Those two bodies prove time travel is real. One of the greatest achievements in science, or one of the biggest catastrophes in human history, has occurred intentionally or unintentionally. And I won't let that go unacknowledged or uninvestigated. The consequences of ignoring it are too grave for the world and for my kids. No, I'm not walking away from this. I never will. There I said it." That was Beth talking to Amanda. They're coming to the conclusion that something's just jiggy about all of this, and that time travel's real, and then how could this all happen? I think in every time travel story, there's a place where the characters and the reader tries to understand this and kind of says, "What's outside of my mind? My mind won't go that far to make me able to understand that. Maybe it's all in the fourth dimension anyway."
Which kind of, yeah, exactly. And I think that maybe to come back to at some point we started talking about Wendy, she outlives Ben, and in the end, this twist at the end, we found out that somebody has given Wendy's parents in present day a huge chunk of money, and they buy a motorhome and start on a trip, and they turn out to be the couple that hits the man from the past and kills him on the night that this all happens.
Yeah. The circle is complete.
Wendy couldn't have known when she was in the past that her parents would buy a motorhome and do that. But could the Cartwright family have known? They couldn't have known they were going to buy a motorhome.
No, because when she died, the list, everything that she knew from the past about the present, that all just disappeared because that part was over. That timeline, that lifeline was done.
Okay, but if you were the heir in the Cartwright family, wouldn't you want to make sure that he goes back in time? Because
your whole wealth and everything you have, if
he doesn't go back in time, that doesn't happen. So at some point, as you start nearing this date, you suspect what's going on with the list and all this. We need to make sure he goes back. He needs to be at this point.
Yeah, there's some real fan fiction in that right there.
Yeah.
Huh?
Like, you don't want him to miss this. You need him to go back in time or everything falls apart.
So the tagline isn't "the accidental time traveler," it's "the accidental time traveler ?
Yeah, a real twist would be like, were they investing in this technology that the military is using to create these ripples?
The whole fan fiction story is unfolding in our podcast right here at Life Best Sci-Fi.
But it seems like, ultimately, there's no way for anybody to know that giving the money would have put them in this situation. Goldberg must have gotten a real kick out of this. With time travel, you've also got some sort of serendipitous moment or coincidence or whatever you want to call it that happens. Somebody gives them money, they buy a motorhome and travel, and they end up hitting the guy. And
totally clever.
Yeah. quite fun.
Okay, I'm sitting at the Poor Decisions. It's right next to the Denny's. I'm sipping my coffee because I've had so much right now, I can't believe you can understand me.
That's what Denny's are for. It's always a bottomless coffee.
Oh my God.
You probably started that back then. Yeah.
Yeah. Bottomless coffee. Yeah. All right. I know you want to talk about our next novel, but wait, there are a couple things that we need to talk about first, real fast. I recommend Netflix 3-Body Problem series.
That's going to be mine too. Yeah.
And it's so much fun. Can't wait for the next season. Hopefully they'll make it. It answered a lot of questions for me since we read the book so many years ago. I went, oh, yeah, okay, I get it now. Okay, I see. And so it was a well-acted, fun movie or series. And then the other thing is next week there's a solar eclipse. 90% in Mexico, but we're going to be out there.
Oh, yeah, so you're going to... Yeah, you're going to see that. I don't know that we're going to see much of that in Seattle here, see it or experience it. My understanding is not much, but you are. That's going to be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to also talk about the 3-Body Problem because I
watched
that
think?
Since we last chatted. Yeah, I loved it. It was one of those rare moments where I think I liked it better than the book, which is very unusual for me. I found some of the physics aspects difficult to work through, even though I found it fascinating and mind-blowing, and I could see how people like to really geek out on that. For me, with the books, just a little more with characters and maybe a bit more with plot. I think there was a little bit of a few moments, maybe, I don't know, episode 5 or 6 here, where it was like slowed down a little bit for me that I didn't love, but it picks back up again. And I overall really enjoyed the series. I mean, I just wanted to binge watch it. And I really enjoyed the characters. I loved the change to setting some aspects in England. I liked the diversity of the cast. I thought the acting was great. And I think what makes it work a little bit better too is I know we only read the first book and I didn't continue on with it. And I think the series brings in, and so if you're somebody who wants to read it first, I think it brings in stuff from at least the second book. I don't know if it's the third, but it brings in some things from the later books at the same time, which seem to work in terms of plot development and character development.
Yeah, I agree.
Spoil some aspects of that. But.
Yeah, I totally agree with that because certain things made sense, pulled it together, and I thought, okay, I really liked it when I read it, and now I really like it when I see it too, even with the changes. So, yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay.
I forgot about the Cultural Revolution
of
it. And as somebody who studied Chinese history, I found really drawn into that period of time, the Cultural Revolution. I just thought it was, I guess, so interesting and horrible how
crazy
you had these families turning on families and all these really terrible aspects of that and how it, sort of bring that in early, that opening scene that was riveting.
That drew me right into it because that part of history, I find it interesting. And it drew me right in. And I thought it was well done. Okay.
Yeah.
We're sitting here at the Poor Decisions Bar, Watering Hole, and we're thinking about what life, death, sci-fi is going to read next. I know we talked about Frankenstein, so I downloaded it. I started reading it. And at the same time, I don't know, Neuromancer by William Gibson popped up again. I know I've read that before. Did we read that together?
We read it,
Neuromancer?
Yeah, this is also pre-podcast. So
yeah.
It's been long enough for me. I'd be keen to revisit that.
Interesting.
I think we talked about Frankenstein, I think arguably like the first sci-fi book. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein,
true.
I think people say. So that's interesting. And then I think I'm looking at, in my mind, some sort of foundational text that we can refer back to. Another one that comes to mind is like Pinocchio, or these stories where you've got this sort of man, human-created intelligence or robot that is brought to life. And so stories like that, I think, are really, even though they're not machines, they are human creations.
Yeah, human creation.
Early,
yeah.
AI, robot AI type, yeah, creatures. I don't know that Pinocchio, I think, doesn't quite work in terms of sci-fi.
But it's an interesting idea. Yeah, Frankenstein, yeah. I've only read maybe a chapter or two, and just like with the H.G. Wells, the early Mars books that we had read, for a modern reader, those are challenging reads. The language, the pace, the ideas are challenging. So I'd be willing to do it, but we'd have to say, okay, now this is a challenge. I don't know. Maybe it's not going to be a challenge for you. But
no, I get it. It's always a real adjustment with those books to get into the style.
Or you could go on a wild ride with Neuromancer. It's really interesting. Again, the second read is really interesting.
Are you saying you'd like to... We could space that out, right? We could make Frankenstein our second one and stretch that a bit. And then go with something like Neuromancer first.
Is that available to you? Do you have that book still, or was it in the library?
I have a copy. I have a hard copy of that myself. Yeah.
Whoa.
Both of those, yeah. So I got it.
Okay. Let's do that.
All right. Yeah. It works.
Are we going to talk about the Spaceman's Ball?
Oh, I'm just going to see you at the Spaceman's Ball, yeah. As always, yeah.
Yeah, I think there might be a Spaceman's Ball during the solar eclipse. I'll look for it.
Oh, cool. I don't even know when that is. Yeah, when is it?
Next week, the 8th. Is that Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, okay. That's Tuesday, Monday, I think, isn't it? The Monday?
This is April.
That's Monday. You're right, Monday, yeah.
Yeah, Monday.
I just did the worst job ever taking notes. Like, nothing. I just had this hard copy I got from the library. And I think part of that was just, in some ways, a tribute to Goldberg, where I just was just enjoying it. I struggled to look at it analytically because I was just enjoying it. It was like
a
fun read.
Right? Now, I recommended this. After I read it, I recommended this, and I had a little bet with myself whether you were going to like it or not. Now, I thought you were going to meh it. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a meh for you. But no, you liked it, and I'm really happy.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would recommend this to pretty much anybody. It's just fun.
I've really enjoyed this talk with you, and I hope that if somebody listens to these, that they can get some value out of it too.
The AI is listening, that's for sure. Yeah. Definitely have one listener. Definitely have one. Or is it just one? Yeah.
That's great. That's a good send off. This has been Life, Death, Sci-Fi.
Life, Death, Sci-Fi.